Father, thank you for another chance to look at history and to consider the principle of liberty in what you have done in history, in our country, in our church, and guide us as we consider this today, that your Spirit can teach us what we need to understand for the times in which we live. We thank you in Christ's name. Amen. We stopped yesterday with the statement from Revelation 13:11 on the back of the first sheet of the handout, which was just two pages yesterday. Another beast coming up out of the earth, he had two horns like a lamb. And we were considering that horns represent what in prophecy? Do you remember? Power, strength, the ability to accomplish things, to prevail. And these horns, though, were like a... What were they like? Like a lamb. Now, a lamb is a baby... What? Sheep, right? So, it could be a ram, could be you. But the idea of a lamb having horns is sort of a little bit strange. Have you ever seen a lamb with horns? Little tiny things growing, maybe? not big horns. Anyway, this is the term. And if you look at it in Revelation, every other place that it's mentioned in Revelation is in reference to. You have any idea? It's used a certain number of times. As I remember, it was like 27 times in Revelation. Do you have any idea who the word lamb refers to every other time in Revelation? Jesus. That's right. One time was in Revelation 5, where John sees the Father sitting on a throne, and he holds a book. Of course, the books back then were like scrolls. He holds a book in his hand. And it's sealed with seven seals, you know. And seals represented authority and something that's could be sacred. And John knew that book had to be opened, that scroll had to be opened, in order for the great controversy to come to an end. Because when you look at the pictures in the Bible of how the great controversy comes to an end, over and over again it says God will reward people according to what? Their deeds, their work. Okay. But how the history of the great controversy has been a long history. How can the onlooking universe know that God's going to reward them according to their works? Because they haven't seen everything. They haven't remembered everything, probably, although the memory of perfect beings probably is a lot better than ours. But what's the purpose of the book then? Everything's recorded. Everything's recorded there. Remember that? There's books in the Bible. And in fact, when you see scenes of judgment in Daniel 7, at the end of Revelation, when the judgment begins, what do they do with the books? They open the books. Have you ever seen pictures of a trial in this country? There's often, if it's a jury trial, the jury is put in place, and what do they do? Do they ask the jury the first day, tell us whether this person is guilty or innocent? No, they can't do that the first day. What do they have to do for the jury? How do they prove? They show and bring proof. And what's that like? It may be somebody's testimony. I've actually seen a DVD once at a trial. I was on a jury. A DVD of one of the persons giving a testimony. Right? They had recorded him. So that's the modern way of opening books, right? You're looking at the record. So that's what it was. And John saw no one could open this. And he actually started weeping. Remember the story? John was weeping because no one could open the book. No one had the authority. No one had prevailed to open the book. And he's weeping because it's like there's no resolution to this great mess we're in. And somebody came to him and said, "Don't weep. Someone's been found to open the book. It's the Lion of the Tribe of Judah." Do you think he looked around for a lion? Probably did. But it says very plainly there, he looked. Do you have your Bibles handy? I'm just thinking this off the top of my memory, but open your Bibles to Revelation 5. This is really interesting how it's described. Revelation 5. And it's right there at the beginning of the chapter. It's one of the elders that said to him in verse 5, "Don't weep. Behold, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed to open the book, to loose the seven seals." And I beheld, the next verse says. And what did he see? In the middle of the throne, must be a big throne, right? In the middle of the throne, and the four beasts, and the midst of the elders, because there's 24 of those, stood who? Revelation 5, verse 6. What did he see standing? A lamb as it had been slain. It's not a dead lamb laying down on the throne. He's standing. So it's clearly a picture of Jesus who was crucified and is now alive. And he's the one that prevailed to open it. So the picture in the book of Revelation, that's just one example, of the lamb is always Jesus. Now this power that comes up out of the earth has two horns and is like a lamb. So what would you say those powers are like? They're like Jesus, aren't they? They must be Christian, true Christian powers. And we've been looking at these two aspects of liberty, the law of liberty, that God makes us free with by the Spirit, by the Son. Makes us free from the law of sin and death, the law of the Spirit of life. And this law has two aspects. What were the two aspects? Supreme love to who? Who do you love? Who does the Bible say to love with everything we have? God. And then the other part is how we treat our fellow creatures, right? Our neighbors. So that's the two things of liberty. We can call it religious liberty, civil liberty. We mentioned that there's various ways you can lose that liberty. And as we came into American history, we became aware that those people who came to this nation, this continent, it was not a country at the time, they were just in separate colonies, they were people who understood the history in Europe of how these liberties were not granted. And it took two forms in history, the lack of that liberty, and these two forms were called canon law and feudal law. So here's some handouts, a handout that actually is a document that I would like just to spend a little bit of time going through with you, because, and I encourage you to read this, it's not... If you ever read how they wrote in the 1600s, it's English, you can understand it, but it's not short sentences, right? And there's some really interesting deep thoughts. This is what we're going to look at, but before we do that, let's just go through the civil history leading up to 1765. The background was actually in English history, and we'll find a reference to that in this document. Not all of these dates, but I've given you dates here. I don't know whether, have you studied Western civilization and gone through that at all in your classes? World history? Anyway, these are all things that happen in England. But they are events, documents, that the English were led to write in order to obtain liberty in contrast to what was happening to them. 1216, the Magna Carta. And if you haven't studied these, it would be good to become familiar with them. Where the king would not have absolute control, you know, like we call a dictator. Petition of Right in 1628. Now, that was Magna Carta was 400 years before, so they had a long history. Petition of Right, 1628. The Habeas Corpus Act, 1679, and the Bill of Rights in 1689. So you can see when was the first colony in North America? Do you remember the date on that? By the way, where was it? You know where the first colony was? The first successful colony that lasted. There was one they tried and it didn't last. It was actually in Virginia, 1607, Jamestown. 13 years later, in 1620, another colony was established north of Virginia, at a place called Plymouth. Remember the story of the Mayflower? Okay, that's... So you can see the dates are that century when there are of these last three English documents. So there, most of the colonists, the early colonists, were all are all from the British Isles. A lot of other immigrants came later, obviously, but they came with this history. 1751, in a place called Pennsylvania, a colony called Pennsylvania. By the way, do you know what Pennsylvania means? Do you know what Sylvania means? Penn was the name of a man who established the colony, William Penn. Sylvania in Latin means woods. There's a place in Romania called Transylvania. You've probably heard of Transylvania, right? It means over the woods, which means north of the Carpathian Mountains, which were wooded. Pennsylvania is a colony, and they decided to actually create a bell to commemorate the 50th anniversary of William Penn's Charter of Privileges, which was Pennsylvania's original constitution. That bell was ordered in 1751, and they put on that bell the words of Leviticus 25, verse 10. Proclaim what? Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. So this is during the time that the colonies were being established. And William Penn, he was a Quaker, and he believed in granting people liberty. So they were already in these colonies understanding the principles of liberty. That bell eventually became famous, and it's now called the Liberty Bell. And it's a symbol that's used on a lot of documents and actually monetary things like coins and dollar bills and things like that, just to commemorate the idea of our idea of liberty. Well, the next decade, 1760s, the man who wrote the document I gave you, John Adams, he was a lawyer in Boston, and they had a group of lawyers. They got together and they shared ideas and stories and documents. And he wrote this essay on a dissertation on the canon in feudal law in 1765. So what was the year that we declared our independence as colonies? 1776. So this is like 11 years before that. And I want to... The numbering in this document, it relates to apparently some other thing that it was extracted from, so it doesn't start on page 1. But these statements that I've given you in the handout, I'm going to show you where they are in the document if you want to highlight them or mark them. But we're going to start with the first one there. Since the promulgation of Christianity, that's on page 22, the very first full paragraph. Okay, see it there? Since the promulgation of Christianity, the two greatest systems of, what's the next word? Tyranny. That means no freedom, right? That have sprung from this original are the canon and the feudal law. Now, John Adams, being a lawyer, he would be particularly interested in systems of law, right? That means how people operate. There is some, at least some written code. But he said these two, canon law and feudal law. You can mark that, yeah, just to make sure that you know where that one is. The next one I've extracted into the handout is over on the, well, let's, before we do that, the next paragraph, he talks about canon law. By the former of these, do you notice that? And at the very bottom of it, what's the principle that's being manifested in this system? That he says this, thus was human nature chained fast for ages in a cruel, shameful, deplorable servitude to him and his subordinate tyrants, who it was foretold would exalt himself above all that was called God and that was worshipped. Who foretold that? Do you have any idea where that statement's from? Somebody who's going to exalt himself above all that is called God and that was worshipped. That's a reference. You may make a note of this on the margin. It's a reference to Daniel chapter 11 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. That's where it was foretold. The system would do what? Exalt himself. What principle is that? Where was that first seen in the universe? The principle of exalting yourself. Exactly. Satan in heaven. Isaiah 14. So this is the Luciferian principle.
Daniel chapter
11. And 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. I'm just giving you chapters. If you can remember the chapter, you can find the verse fairly easily. I don't try to remember all the verses. If you can remember the chapter, that can take you right to where you need to go. Then the next paragraph. In the latter system, which is the second one, the feudal law, another system of tyranny. And toward the end of that paragraph, from the top of 23, he says this was a state of servile dependence on their lords. In other words, you were just totally dependent. You were not independent. You're not free. The next statement I highlighted in the handout is the next paragraph. But another event still more calamitous to human liberty was a wicked confederacy between the two systems of tyranny above described. So you have canon law, you have feudal law, and you have them coming together. We have another name for that. We call it the union of church and state. Okay? And this was even worse. What happened as a result of that in history? The next paragraph. And I've extracted that in the handout. One age of darkness succeeded another. This was the Dark Ages, what we call the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages. And then he says, they succeeded another till God in his benign providence raised up the champions who began and conducted what? The Reformation. So John Adams was clearly understood the history of Europe, and he understood that the lack of liberty began to be broken, the chains of tyranny began to be broken in what event? Reformation. Protestant Reformation. Now, when did the Reformation begin? I'm looking at these dates that we've been talking about here. Say it again? Yes. It was in the early 1500s. So this was 100 years before these documents, these last three documents of rights that the English had. So if you remember, they called it the Reformation of the 16th century. And of course, the numbering of the centuries is one number higher than the actual number. So 16th century would be the 1500s. So you're right. And then he says, from the time of the Reformation to the first settlement of America, knowledge gradually spread in Europe, but especially where? In England. And that's why we have documented here these English charters, rights, acts that were establishing freedom, not just against the church, but against the state as well. He makes the comment in the next paragraph, bottom of page 23, it was this great struggle that peopled America. So now you understand the background of these people coming to North America. Again, he's writing this before there's a nation. We're not the United States of America when he's writing this. But America was the statement they used for North America, which are where the colonies were. And you can read, again, I encourage you to read the details through here. That's all I have in the handout. But I'd like to just to sort of cruise through this document and highlight, again, these, can we say it, two horns like a lamb? Because over and over and over again, he's talking about these two principles. Top of page 24, first full paragraph. After their arrival here, they began their settlement and formed their plan, both of ecclesiastical and civil government. There's the two horns. Ecclesiastical and civil government, in direct opposition to the canon and the feudal systems. See that? That's what these people were doing before there was even a nation here. When the colonies were first formed, they had the understanding of European history. Many of them had suffered persecution. They had had no economic opportunities to own things, you know, to work hard and to start a business and things like that. But here they had the freedom to do that. And they were establishing systems where that was possible. And in that paragraph, he talks about their understanding of history. They actually left libraries, he said, that were still in being. They had books. They had lots of books that taught them that history. Toward the bottom of the page, he talks about the wise, humane, and benevolent principles that they were following in establishing what they had. It was founded in revelation and reason. Revelation refers to what? The Bible. And reason is, does it make sense? What's going to work? What's practical common sense? And he said, two sentences down, tyranny in every form, shape, and appearance was their disdain and abhorrence. So they abhorred and disdained what? Tyranny in every form. That's tyranny is lack of liberty. People that want to... Remember we said back in our handout that there's two ways that you can lose liberty. You can lose liberty by saying, I want to live for myself, right? Because that sounds like liberty. But since you're not the one who made you, you're not the one who designed you, when you start living for yourself, you're again following the Luciferian principle. And that's the... It looks good, but it's because we're deceived into thinking that self is good. No, that's actually a picture of tyranny. The greatest tyranny is the tyranny of self, by the way. You know, you can run away from everybody else to get free, but if you're not free, your mind is bound down to your little puny thoughts and whatever. You know, because of sin, our mind's really been damaged. So... That's one thing that destroys freedom. The other thing that destroys freedom is, again, this is the two forms of tyranny on the first page of our handout. Someone else forces you to do their will. Okay? And that's what they were disdaining, both forms of tyranny, because they understood revelation and reason. And it said, he says in the very bottom of the page where it goes over from 24 to 25, they had a spirit in which they opposed the tyrants of those days in what two areas? Church and state. There's the two horns again, right? The two horns, the church and state. A free church and a free state. It's interesting because this man, I tended to think before I read this document that our founding fathers were not all that religious. They were deist, which is a form of Christianity, but it doesn't believe in a personal God, and it often doesn't believe in the Bible. But you can see already that he's elevated the Bible. He's talked about the prophecy of the Bible. He talks about following revelation. In this same paragraph, they saw clearly that the popular powers must be placed as a guard, a control, a balance to the powers of, here's the two things again, the monarch and the priest. State and church, there, in that order. In every government, or else it would become what? The man of sin. That's 2 Thessalonians 2 again. Mm-hmm. So make a note there. 2 Thessalonians 2. The whore of Babylon. What Bible passage is that? Revelation 17, where this woman is pictured as riding the beast. We're at the top of page 25. Yeah. The mystery of iniquity. That is, again, a reference to 2 Thessalonians 2. a great and detestable system of fraud, violence, and usurpation. He's not just speaking off the top of his imagination. This is what Europe had experienced for centuries. And they are clearly thinking, we're going to do something here different. Okay? A government of the church, more consistent with scriptures, there's one horn, right? And a government of the state, more agreeable to the dignity of human nature. There's the other horn. So I'm just saying, this is a document, above all documents that I know of, that really explains what Revelation 13:11 is all about. Two horns like a lamb. Adams didn't reference that passage at all. He didn't have the understanding of that prophecy in that sense. He talked about human nature and the Christian religion requiring this new system. A little bit further down in that paragraph. And he talked about the feudal inequalities and dependencies could be spared. And then later in the paragraph, the fantastical ideas derived from the canon law. So again, in this document, as you read it in detail, he's going back and forth the danger of these two systems and what America was doing to establish in those two areas of life something that is free and would foster freedom. Turn over to the next page, page 26. Look at this amazing statement. Right below his reference to the republics of Greece and Rome, again, they knew their history. It's about in the middle of the paragraph. He said, they thought all such slavish subordinations were equally inconsistent with two things. The constitution of human nature. All men were created equal. And that religious liberty, there it is, he names it, that religious liberty, with which who has made us free? Jesus has made us free. This man is a believer in Jesus, and he understands. That's, again, a reference to John chapter 8. You shall know the truth, truth will set you free. The Son will make you free. We talked about that in the beginning of our handout. So he's referencing, alluding to that Bible passage. Over on page 27, I'm just giving you some highlights of his thoughts. Second full paragraph. They were convinced by their knowledge of what? Human nature. In other words, is it safe to trust human nature? To put those last six commandments above the first six? No. I mean, if you put Caesar at the top, if you put other human beings at the top above God, that's taking you down the path of tyranny. Right? So, they knew human nature derived from history and their own experience. So that's how they learned about human nature. Nothing could preserve their prosperity from the encroachments of the two systems of tyranny, in opposition to which, as has been observed already, they erected their government in church and state, but knowledge diffused generally throughout the whole body of the people. That's why they established schools. You're in a system here where the goal is to impart to you knowledge that will make a difference in how you live the rest of your life. Okay? Their civil and religious principles, therefore, conspired to prompt them to use every measure, to take every precaution in their power to propagate and perpetuate knowledge. The power of understanding knowledge. The foundations of colleges, he talks about that. Later in the same paragraph, every town consisting of so many families should always be furnished with a grammar school. That means the primary school, right? They really focused on education. I would say in those years we probably had a higher literacy rate in North America than we do now.
That's true.
Because of their value of education. Over on page 28, down toward the bottom of the paragraph, another vital thing in addition to education, the educational system, if you see the phrase settlers of America, what did they value?
Property.
But the one I'm looking at here is the press. Toward the bottom of the paragraph where it talks about settlers of America, you see that phrase jumping up?
Yeah.
They valued the printing press. The freedom of the press, right? And he's actually thanking the fellows that were printing this for him because they had gotten into trouble. And he says, keep being free and print what you think. Very bottom, going over to the next page, the freedom of thinking, speaking, and writing. Okay? Very, very important. later in the same paragraph, publishing and pointing out that avarice and ambition, that's a danger. People that are trying to take control, expose them. You know, write about it. Of course, we have other ways of press now, includes the electronic press, right? Which is radio and television, all the other media too. So, those were some highlights. I'm going to go jump way over now to page 32.
What was the highlight on page
29? 29 was the fifth line down, publishing and pointing out that avarice and ambition. Avarice is greed. Ambition means you're exalting yourself. Okay? Page 32. Third line from the bottom. All became, he's actually saying, he's encouraging people, let all become attentive to the grounds and principles of government, ecclesiastical and civil. There it is again, those two things. Right toward the bottom there of 32. And then, top of 33, third line, he's warning. Defended for us the inherent rights of mankind against what? Foreign and domestic tyrants and usurpers, against arbitrary kings and cruel priests. There's the two systems, right? Church and state. Later in the same paragraph, he has two recollects. And I'm looking at the second recollect. Recollect, that means recall, remember, the civil and religious principles. So can you see he's really, this is his theme all the way through here. Over to the last big page, 34. He saw in his day, I don't know whether you realize this, this is before the Declaration of Independence. This is while there were still colonies. Middle of the paragraph there, right after the word Great Britain, phrase Great Britain, there seems to be a direct and formal design on foot to enslave all America. The first step that is intended seems to be an entire subversion of the whole system of our fathers. Now, he's writing this in 1765. Their fathers went back to when the colonies were first beginning to be established in the previous century. So this is only 100 and some years. The whole system of our fathers by the introduction of the canon and feudal law into America. So again, and he's writing this to say, let's learn the lessons of history. Let's see how important these two principles are. Let's preserve them for our posterity. Again, 10 years later, what was he a party to signing? The Declaration of Independence. And as we could say, the rest is history. What's happened since that time and his desire for that. Now, in that declaration, back to your handout, the first handout I gave you, the last paragraph on the second page, Declaration of Independence, July 4, 1776. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator. Again, it's based on revelation and reason. Remember those two things he said? This is revelation, because revelation tells us about the Creator. That they are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable, what's that word mean? No one can take it from you. Alien means foreign. It cannot be made foreign to you. It is inherent in you. You have inalienable rights. People can take it away, but they have violated a right that is not theirs to do. In other words, they become a tyrant. These are inalienable rights. Among these rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. If someone's governing you without your consent, that is a form of tyranny. And they're realizing the importance of that. So I highlighted those two phrases. All men are created equal, and the just powers of government are derived from the consent of the governed. That whatever form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. So that's why they were under, if you look at the way the governments of the colonies were organized, they were operating under charters of England. And the charters could be issued either by Parliament or by the king directly. And some of the colonies had, I think most of them had charters under the king, if not all. And they had no voice in Parliament, the colonies. So when the Parliament in England, because of their war debt, again, in these systems of tyranny, there's a lot of wars because everybody's trying to exalt themselves. And they'd had long wars fighting on Europe, on the continent, and they had a huge war debt. Do you know what that means? To fight a war, you have to buy supplies and ammunition and all types of stuff, and the government may not have it. So they borrow money from the banks or whoever can loan them money. Well, they have this huge war debt they have to pay back. And the Parliament said, you know, across the ocean there's these colonies that are growing up, and they're prosperous. Let's tax them to get some money to pay off our war debt. And the colonies said what? No taxation without representation. We have no voice in Parliament. You have no right to tax us. And they appealed to the king, because that's who they were under. Again, their charter was under the king. And what did the king do? He sided with Parliament. And they said, this is injustice. This is tyranny. And so we have the right to alter or abolish the government to preserve, not to overthrow what we've been experiencing, to preserve what we've been experiencing. This is why the American Revolution was of a totally different character than the French Revolution, which happened in the same era. The French Revolution, it was such a mess. It just exploded with anger and chaos and terror, and it was to overthrow the existing order. American Revolution was to preserve the existing order against what England was doing to change things. So it was clearly, I would not say it was a rebellion. It was a fight to preserve things, not to overthrow things. There's more to that, this is not a lecture on American history, but I'm trying to build the background for where we're headed. And I'm basically highlighting, again, these two aspects of freedom. Is it becoming clearer and clearer to you? I mean, they're really important. Worshiping God with all of our heart, which means the church is a free church, and loving our neighbor as ourselves, which means the civil government is not enslaving you either. You are actually free to love your neighbor, and all men are created equal. There's a picture there of that. Okay, I have another handout for you to continue this, and this handout actually is, the pages are numbered. So it's sort of continuing. The first handout you had, you might want to put 1 and 2 at the bottom of the pages. I failed to do that when I printed that off. Yes.
We've shared his comments about Jesuit order in a letter he wrote to Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
But I didn't recognize this. Yeah. This is a very fun.
I had never heard about it probably until within the last 10 years a friend shared it with me, and it's become, you know, there are certain things as you learn history that stand out for some reason in your mind. This is something that really stands out because of how concise it is and how repetitive it is talking about these two horns like a lamb, which I think is. Now, these dual liberties, we've been talking about these dual liberties. I'm going to just give you some more evidences for those. And these are from the book Great Controversy. I understand you've been reading that book. And you can see they start in chapter 14, later English reformers. And it goes on down through this first side of the handout, page 3. Let's just read these together. This is the 1600s. Again, the century that the colonies were founded, the century before Adams' document. In the 17th century, 1600s, thousands of pastors were expelled from their positions. This is in Europe. The people were forbidden on pain of heavy fines, imprisonment, and banishment to attend any religious meetings except such as were sanctioned by the church. So this is not civil tyranny. This is ecclesiastical tyranny. Okay. Those faithful souls who could not refrain from gathering to worship God were compelled to meet in dark alleys, in obscure garrets, and in some seasons in the woods at midnight. In the sheltering depths of the forest, a temple of God's own building, those scattered and persecuted children of the Lord assembled to pour out their souls in prayer and praise. But despite all their precautions, many suffered for their faith. Persecution. The jails were crowded. Families were broken up. Many were banished to foreign lands. Yet God was with his people, and persecution could not prevail to silence their testimony. Many were driven across the ocean to America, and here laid the foundations of, here's the two horns, civil and religious liberty, which have been the bulwark and glory of this country. Bulwark is a picture of what? You have an effective defense against something that's evil. Bulwark is a defense. Okay? Well, the evil that these liberties are protecting you against is the tyranny of somebody trying to control you in church or in government, not giving you freedom. And glory, obviously, is like, wow, these two horns like a lamb, they're not just two stubs on a person on an animal's head, right? These are things of glory. They may look very humble, but they're very, very important. In that same century, there was one of the colonies that was established, which, interestingly enough, of the 13 original colonies, what did this colony have that set it aside in terms of size? It was the smallest of all of them. In fact, it still is the smallest state in our country. The history of how this colony became established is a history that I would encourage you to become familiar with. In fact, I've given you a cover of a book that I would highly recommend you add to your library if you have a chance. You can see what it's called, Liberty of Conscience. A man by the name of Roger Williams came to the Plymouth Colony in Massachusetts Bay Area there, and because of his ideas, he was not allowed to stay there. He was banished. They were actually going to kill him. In other words, these people came to America to find freedom, but they didn't know how to give freedom. You know, if somebody didn't agree with them, then they brought some of that intolerance with them. And so here's what Roger Williams had to do. He had to make his way, this is the dead of winter, by the way, at last, after months of change and wandering, to the shores of Narragansett Bay, which is below Massachusetts. He there laid the foundation of the first state of modern times that in the fullest sense recognized the right of religious freedom. He had to go back to England to get a charter to establish this new government. And he succeeded in doing that. He had contacts in England. He had a standing there. And for the first time in the very founding charter of this government, it was stated, freedom of conscience. You can believe what your conscience tells you to believe. The fundamental principle of Roger Williams' colony, by the way, what was it called? Rhode Island, was that, quote, that every man should have the liberty to worship God according to the light of his own conscience. There it is. His little state, Rhode Island, became the asylum of the oppressed, and it increased and prospered until its foundation principles, what are they? Civil and religious liberty. Here's the two horns. Became the cornerstones of the American Republic. All of the other colonies, believe it or not, I mean, because of Roger Williams' own experience, we can tell that. They didn't understand. And they did not grant freedom to others that they fled to this continent to find for themselves. But Williams saw the inconsistency of that. And he lobbied for it. He wrote books about it. It caused a huge furor. That's why he was banished from Massachusetts. But he stood his ground. Do you know where the first Baptist church in all of North America was? Rhode Island. Do you know where the first Jewish synagogue in all of North America was? Rhode Island. Very, very interesting. And the principles of that little colony, the other colonies had established churches, which means they picked a certain church, a certain denomination, and they said, that is our church for this colony. And when you established a church that way, you supported the church out of the tax money. And the people in Rhode Island and the people in Virginia particularly said, that is tyranny to take my tax money and give it to a church that I may not even believe in. And so before the American Republic was formed, all the other colonies had to disestablish their churches. That's what we call separation of church and state. They had to disestablish their churches, which was really it was a breakthrough. Not everybody agreed on it, but I find it amazing. This little colony, the smallest of all of them, its principle got to be accepted by all the other 12 colonies. I think it's a miracle of God, right? So, let's look, and that was Great Controversy 295. The first one we read was 252. For those who may not have the handout that are listening to this later. Revelation 13:11. Look at this statement from Great Controversy 441. And he had two horns like a lamb. The lamb-like horns indicate youth, innocence, and gentleness, fitly representing the character of the United States when presented to the prophet as coming up in 1798. Again, that's a prophetic date we'll consider some more. Among the Christian exiles who first fled to America and sought an asylum from royal oppression and priestly intolerance, do you see it there? Mm-hmm. Two forms of tyranny. Royal oppression, no civil liberty, priestly intolerance, that's the canon law, the feudal law and the canon law, and that's no church freedom. They were fleeing from that, finding an asylum. There were many who determined to establish a government upon the broad foundation of civil and religious liberty. Their views found place in the Declaration of Independence, which set forth the great truth that all men are created equal and endowed with the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the Constitution guarantees to the people the right of self-government. Remember consent of the governed? Providing that representatives elected by the popular vote shall enact and administer the laws. You're not in Washington, D.C., but you have a representative there. That's what a representative government is all about. And you, by virtue of your right to elect them, have given them the authority to act in your behalf. That's a representative government. That's a republic. A democracy means every person has to vote on every law. That would be very cumbersome. And we think we're a democracy. Really, we're not. We're a republic. We have a representative form of government. Freedom of religious faith was also granted, that every man being permitted to worship God according to the dictates of his conscience. Republicanism, there's the form of government, and Protestantism, there's the form of church, became the fundamental principles of the nation. These principles are what?
Secret.
The secret of it is power. There's the horn, right? Horns are symbols of power and prosperity. Because when you're free, you prosper. Just picture people in slavery. How much do they prosper? How much can they own? How much can they start businesses and actually become able to bless others? No, they're kept down. Look at children that are raised that way. How much do they prosper? Right? If you're raised in a very cruel house, you know, you may survive, but your brain particularly is impacted. The oppressed and downtrodden throughout Christendom have turned to this land with interest and hope. Millions have sought its shores, and the United States has risen to a place among the most powerful nations of the earth. Published in 1911, which was the beginning of the last century. So, that's the bottom of page 3. We'll stop there for today, and we'll continue tomorrow with the Advent movement, which is, again, as I said at the end of last time, comes up and is fostered in this cradle, as it were, because of the importance of these two principles. And we'll tie that to what our movement has consisted of. Another book I would recommend, Founding Brothers. We often call them Founding Fathers. They knew each other. We look at them as fathers, but among themselves, they were brothers. Okay? And written by Joseph Ellis, winner of the Pulitzer Prize. A very, very helpful book to learn about these men, John Adams being one of them. Joseph Ellis, E-L-L-I-S. It's in here that he makes the statement they thought it was unethical to promote themselves for public office. Again, self-exaltation, they saw the danger of it. If somebody was a good, qualified person, his friends had to promote him for that to be ethical. How much we have changed, how much we have lost in the time that has come, and how much our political system has turned into a system of self-exaltation. And when we do that, we don't realize the danger of the path we're on and the Luciferian principle that's functioning. It doesn't look well for preserving the liberties that we value. Let's close with prayer. Father, thank you for the chance again to review history and to become more understanding and appreciative of what you gave these men of old, an understanding of freedom, how it was founded in Scripture, and also it appealed to human reason and their understanding of history. Help us to value these principles in our personal lives and even in our civic lives as we have opportunity to carry responsibilities in our town or in our state, whatever aspect of government we might need to help contribute to. Help us by your Spirit to value these things, especially in the days ahead when prophecy tells us that the liberties will be less and less for us. Thank you for the chance to learn these things. In Christ's name, amen.